You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how to apply an F the chair covers mentality to wedding planning, healthy eating, and to life. Whoa. Yeah. Let that one sink in. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. This episode is enthusiastically sponsored by a product I couldn't swear by more if I tried. Four Sigmatic Mushrooms. I didn't say swear about more. I said swear by. I couldn't swear by the magic of mushrooms more if I tried. I originally tried a packet of Four Sigmatic Mushroom tea in a glass of hot water because, well, I was gifted a free single packet of Four Sigmatic Mushroom tea by a friend. I had no idea what it did or what was going to happen to me. And I was skeptical because this whole mushroom thing is trendy right now. And I'm always skeptical of trendy things. Read, I avoid trendy things to not be trendy. You know what I mean? But anyway, I drank the shrooms and I felt truly awesome. It's hard to explain. I just felt more awesome than before I drank it. Since then, I've ordered it and consumed about 2 packets of shrooms a day, and I can't get enough. I am telling you, these mushrooms are magic. Although they don't make me hallucinate in a bathtub like my ex-boyfriend's famous magic mushroom experience, which honestly, he seemed way too proud of in hindsight. But hear this, I wasn't hallucinating the magical effects of these shrooms. They are ultra scientifically proven to boost immunity and gut health. Yes, please, and thank you. And the 4 different shrooms that Four Sigmatic uses most, hence the 4 in Four Sigmatic, I just got that too. Well, like 3 minutes ago. But they all do different epic things for your bod. Reishi helps you relax. Cordyceps give you non-caffeinated energy for sports and stuff. Lion's mane, which does not come from a lion's mane, boosts your brain. That one's easy to remember. And chaga is good for immunity issues like when you're traveling or feeling run down and or both. Okay, enough blabbering from me. I just finished a mushroom matcha latte. Oh yeah, Four Sigmatic has mushroom matcha powder. If I could just stop blabbering for a damn second, I could tell you that because you listen to this podcast, thank you for that, you can save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroom stuff you'll want to buy off their site, Four Sigmatic, FourSigmatic.com, using code PARTYINMYPLANTS to save that 15%, baby. Man, maybe I had way too much mushroom matcha. Okay, onward to the show. Alicia McCormick, known fondly as the Bride Chilla, because she's the host of the hit number one wedding planning podcast called Bride Chilla, isn't a wedding planner. She isn't a gown designer or a wedding caterer. She's just a gal. Well, she's an author, comedian, and TV producer with an on-point Australian accent who likes to help peeps become chiller brides, the same way I like to help peeps be chiller healthy eaters. But hold on, do not turn this podcast off if you've already done the wedding thing or aren't even close to doing the wedding thing, because I promise we talk about a heck of a lot of important stuff that's not wedding related. And between you and me, Alicia's whole wedding-themed podcast really is an inspiring life podcast disguised under the wedding, guys. Sneaky, sneaky. A little warning here. Swears are sworn during this chat, so if you have kiddos in the room or a cat or a dog or a plant whom you don't want to hear naughty words that sound deceptively not naughty because they're said in a cute Australian accent, you might want to pop in those headphones or take out those earmuffs. Another little warning here, this is a motivating episode. It's an inspiring chat. It's a convo that might make you fist pump in the air or even scream out, yes, which really I'm learning isn't meant to be screamed. Let's keep it in writing, people. But it also might challenge some of your beliefs, especially those about chair covers, rehearsal dinners, flower girls, and even the meaning of friends. Not the TV show, but the actual idea of having cronies. And family. I know. Deep. Huh? Just stay open is all I'm saying. Because as we reiterate a whole bunch in this chat, the way to live the most authentically and thus the most happily is to do what you want to do, not what society, what Pinterest, which really, I mean, what's the difference, huh? Or what your dentist wants you to do. Well, actually, I'm really glad my dentist suggested I switch to extra soft toothbrushes. Game changer. And flossing is great too. So, okay, you can usually listen to your dentist, but still question it. Okay, showtime. Alicia Bridechilla. First of all, best name ever. The Bridechilla. I mean, Alicia's great too, but I mean, Bridechilla is gold.
Thank you. And I have to say, it evolved. We didn't start as we, as I. I say we like I've got a team here. It's just me. Hello. Hello. There's no one else here. It's just me. It started with a different podcast name, the Save the Date Wedding Podcast, but it was too much to say. And then people started referring, I started talking about Bridechillas, and then people were referring to each other as chillers. And I was like, let's just call it Bridechilla.
I mean, worked it's just well. Brilliant. Yeah, I love it. I mean, you want to help people be chill brides.
Yeah. I do. I really do. Life goal.
Life goal. So how did this become your life goal? I mean, that you're not a wedding planner. You're not a wedding dress maker. You're not a caterer. You're a former or current comedian?
Yes. I share a very similar background. I think we share a similar background with each other. I, too, a reformed comedian. I don't know. It will never be out of me. And I no doubt will get up and start gigging again in the future. But I don't like late nights like you. And when I found a sort of vocation that I could use my comedic chops, but not have to go out past 8 o'clock at night, and I could wear stretchy pants,
yes,
I was like, lock it in, bitches. So, yeah, look, I actually have a bit of a stand-up comedy background. I used to write for a lot of you might hear my accent. I'm an Australian.
Didn't notice.
I mean, I could do the American accent if it's easier.
I know. So I've heard you do that on another podcast, and I was shocked. That's so impressive.
I really like accents. Well, that was part of my act. I did a lot of voices and silly things, but – yeah, I wrote for panel shows for TV for years, and my day job is actually as a TV producer. So I have a lot of weird entertainment strings to my bow. But my husband Rich and I were planning our wedding 5 years ago, and there was nothing like this around. You know, it was basically the olden days. And I was working on a morning television show in Australia, which was sort of like The View. It was our version, but it was called The Circle. It's always the something.
Literally and the same thing. The circle.
It's the same. Except we sat at a couch, not around a table. Oh, risky.
Why? And why was it circle then? I would have thought like a circular desk, like at The View.
That would make sense. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
like a half circle.
This is the problem. This is why I didn't last the distance. I didn't think about the couch. Oh, my God. This was the circle of people. I don't know. But I don't actually know.
Okay.
I was on air. I was a field reporter, and they followed our wedding planning. And by the end of it all, my agent had said, "There's a publisher that might want to publish a book about your wedding planning. Would you like to give it a crack?" And I'm like, "Why not? I'll write a book. Easy." I wrote a book, and funnily enough, I've just finished another book, and it's nothing like the book that I wrote 5 years ago. It's sort of evolved about wedding planning. So it started there. Long story short, my husband and I moved from Australia to England, to London, and I didn't want to go and start doing brand new, as you would know, Talia, the whole idea of going and doing new stand-up gigs in a new city sucks.
Yeah. And in a new country. I mean, not even a new city, new country where you have similar competitive accents. I mean.
Exactly. And the idea of doing that and starting from scratch and getting on the tube every night and going into the darkness and having to do 5-minute gigs, I was like, bugger that. I'll just do a podcast. So I thought weddings was something that was a bit underutilized as a topic, and just sat in my bedroom with a ironing board and a microphone on the ironing board, and just started to talk and hope that someone would listen. And that was 3 years ago. So
how do you not get sick about talking about weddings? I mean, you've had, what, 300 episodes, over 300?
Yeah. How,
I'm sick of talking about my wedding and it's been like 3 months.
Well, here's the tricky thing. Once we get everyone in, the bride chillers in, yeah, we talk about wedding planning, but a lot of the conversation is about the stuff that happens after weddings. It's about communication. I just did a really great interview that's coming up in a few weeks about mindfulness and looking at self-care. Mm. So I really think this is not necessarily about the aesthetics. I don't really, can I swear on your podcast?
Yeah.
Great, because I really like to swear. I don't give a shit about the physical. I mean, I talk about the decorative stuff, but really to me, that's not where the problems come into feeling stressed and overwhelmed and the pressure. It's coming from obligation and feeling like, mm-hmm. as we do in all aspects of our life, this is not just about wedding planning, this pressure to conform and be like the Joneses and look like things on Instagram and, you know, really trying to solve some of these problems and take the heat off a little bit because we put enough pressure on ourselves in our everyday life, let alone planning a party, which is so silly.
Oh, it's so silly. And I cannot relate more to what you're saying. I mean, for me, this whole thing has just been so similar to life. I mean, I'm planning the wedding just brings out these real big life topics that for me, you know, it's about really being comfortable doing your own thing rather than conforming to other people's things. I mean, I know that that's your message. You say like one of your mantras is, you know, fuck the chair covers, right?
Chair
like,
covers, yeah.
You know,
fuck 'em.
Like, fuck 'em. Like, don't sweat the small stuff. Cause I feel like a lot of brides and then just people in general just have a hard time owning what they truly want for their wedding or for their life. And instead, just, you know, doing what other people want or what society says or what their wedding planner says.
Yeah, I think we've become really fixated with this idea of, well, my big thing is, perfection obviously doesn't exist. And we can talk about this in the world of weddings, body image, careers, all this sort of stuff. And the wedding industry as a whole really perpetuates this sort of bullshit idea that you have to create the perfect day and the best day of your life. And I always say to my listeners, I really had a great time on our wedding day, but I bloody hope there's another best day of my life coming about. Or what the hell do we have to live for if we just have this pinnacle of our existence that's based around a party, which to me, you know, that sort of sucks in a way. It's great. It's a great party, but also surely there are other achievements in our lives. And it's also coming down to feminism as well as to say the wedding is really, the industry is really aimed towards women, but also making us feel a bit shit about ourselves a lot of the time. So to me, you know, we go back to the idea of talking about weddings for 300 episodes. If people listen to this show and join the community and learn about connecting with other people and other bride chillers, if the best thing they get out of it is just realizing that we're in a, obviously stating the obvious now, in a bit of a screwed up situation for women at the moment, but we can empower each other and also make decisions that aren't necessarily about the aesthetic, then I've done my job. I really would feel happy about that.
That's wonderful. That's amazing. You know, they always say like, what is it? Like sell them what they want. Sell them what they want, like give them what they need or something like that. I feel like you're, you know, talking about dresses and bringing on people to talk about, you know, wedding planning, but you're really preaching and teaching this like bigger picture message of being authentic and going against the grain and being true to yourself, which I guess is the same thing as being authentic and just being chill, you know, and not putting all your eggs into this one wedding basket. Because like you said, I mean, you had your wedding, it's done. And what, you're just not supposed to have another amazing day of your life after that? Because that was supposed to be the
That's
most
over.
Amazing day of your life. That's it. You're
That's
done.
It. Forget it.
It's all downhill from
Retire.
Here. Right?
Retire.
That's just such a lousy way of looking at this.
Yeah. It
Crazy.
Is. And I think it's not until you stop and think about it. And then one thing I've really noticed, and a lot of my listeners sort of have said that, you know, when you click on Facebook, you get engaged and it's the same when you have a baby and all this sort of stuff. The life moments that are then advertise back at you is really interesting to see, you know, it's weight loss and it's teeth whitening and it's, you know, it's all about this aesthetic improvement of yourself that people are trying to buy into while the chips are down a little bit and you're feeling like, oh, I should be looking a different way. I should be feeling a different way. And for me, that's like this sort of we're at a real crisis stage of, I think, of wedding media and looking at how it's all dealt with, because it sort of sucks, you know. It's just made to make us feel not great. And also diversity in looking at wedding magazines. Look, I'm a white girl from Hobart, Tasmania, Australia. But even, you know, I don't have long, luscious locks, and I'm healthy, but I'm not like super skinny. And I look at some of the ways that we're supposed to look, air quotes, and it really gives me the shits.
Yeah.
How we, you know, and I, how do you feel when you look at all this wedding media? Because you're in the crux of it right now. You're in the heart of it.
Well, it's funny because I just recorded a podcast episode a few weeks ago about the whole epidemic about shedding for the wedding and you know, I mean, it rhymes, so I'll give them that, but you know, shed for the wed. But you know, for me, what happened was I got engaged and I was like, well, I guess I got to start shedding for the wedding. Like, isn't that what you do? Like, you know, that's just what you do. And like 2 weeks into my journey, I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, I love my body. I'm chilling. I'm great. I could get married tomorrow because I've worked all these years on eating healthily and exercising every day so that I'm my best self every day, so that when tomorrow, you know, when the wedding comes, like, I'm already my best self. I don't need to change. And that's really what my message is and what I feel so connected to, which is just try to be your best self every day. And then by default, your wedding day will come and you're still your best self. And that doesn't mean you have to lose 50 pounds or, you know, and I heard something that you said on your podcast, which is something I also said on mine about the shedding for the wedding thing, which is like, your person decided they wanted to marry you already. Yeah. So maybe you should look like the person that they wanted to marry when you actually marry them.
Exactly. It's like, what's the point? And also, look, to be serious about the shedding for the wedding and the sweating for the wedding, I've sort of said I spend time like investigating, listen to me, investigating, looking into the hashtag and seeing some really like sick shit happening with people pressuring each other. And that to me is not, like, there's nothing healthy. And I'm not, you know, I love working out. I love healthy eating. And I can't wait to talk about this, by the way. But also, I think you have to do things for the right reasons, not just for I'm just going to drop a bunch of keys before the wedding day and then let it all go and not have a healthy lifestyle afterwards. It's really competitive and weird and bordering on a bit sad, I think, sometimes. I just want to jump on Instagram and go, stop it. You don't need to do 20 hours of cardio a week. Just get a life, you know, enjoy yourself.
And I mean, do you think it's, you know, the magazine? I actually don't read any bridal magazines. I mean, I don't really read magazines in general, but I guess, you know, when you look at photos, I just don't really do that anyway. But I guess if you were doing that, if you're one of those brides who are like on Pinterest every day or reading the magazines, is it just that there's every bride is just, you know, stick thin and it's just trying to tell you that that's how you should be? Or I feel like, you know, even like most gyms, at least here in New York, have like some bridal deal. You know, it's like the bride and her bridesmaids or the bride and groom, you know, shedding for the wedding thing. And I feel like it's just a common assumption. That's what happened to me, where I was like, okay, I'm engaged, got the ring, time to shed. And I'm like, what are you talking? Like, I had to step back and just be like, what are you doing? Like, no, that's not who you are. Like, what? Stop. It's just crazy. And I feel like there's so much pressure. And so, I mean, for your listeners, I know you have like a really wonderful community of people that you really interact with. Like, what do you tell them when they're feeling that pressure to shed for the wed?
Well, I think it's interesting, and it's sort of evolving a little bit now, but you talk about it, the media, but it's also families as well. I think there's some sort of weird thing that families can go, oh, you need to lose a couple of kilos. See those little love handles there? And you go, well, that's not really going to help me, and it's not helping my body image. And it's also some bridal stores have this question, and I used to do a bit of stand-up about this years ago, way before I ever did Bridechiller. But it was, it was all about this idea that you walk in there and they're like, how much weight do you plan to lose? And
really? I haven't gone dress shopping yet. So, but I have heard that from one other person that they said, oh, well, we'll just size it a few sizes down because I, you know, we assume you'll be smaller by your wedding date.
Yeah. And I mean, there's no discouraging if
that's
people want to tone
crazy.
Up or feel, you know, but it's like that should not be a question that's asked to anyone in a public forum like that, and let alone a day that you're supposed to be feeling freaking fantastic. So I feel like there's this really strange sort of Stranger Things, other side, other world, where you go, oh, it's fine to just talk about someone's body weight when you walked into a shop and you're going to a store and you're going to sell them a $2,000 dress. Mm. It's so weird when you think about it that way. But I think when it comes to the community, it's a really, we've got this Facebook group and it's, there's lots of very sort of honest, you know, as you said, authentic conversations happening. And it's really gives you a good kick up the ass to sort of see people go, hey, I'm not going to stop eating desserts for the next 14 months because I am, you know, quote unquote, supposed to look a certain way. I feel amazing. And it's really great to be empowered like that and be a group of chicks that just go, yeah, I'm good. I'm sexy. I own it.
Right. Yeah. And you, I mean, someone already decided they want to look at you every day for the rest of their lives and sure. be with you. I mean, you're fine. Like, it's not, you're good. Like, you know,
you're good.
And,
exactly.
And that's why, you know, for me, it just comes back to, you know, eating well and exercising and treating yourself well every day. So you're your best every day, because like you said, it's just one party, you know, and if you act like that is just like what your life is all building up to, and then you have this party where you have to look literally, well, perfect, quote unquote, or just like a stranger, then, you know, it's just one day. Like, you should aspire to feel and look your best every day.
I agree. And no one wants to see Skeletor at the end of the aisle. It's not sexy.
No. I've been to weddings where, like, I didn't even recognize the bride on the day. I like did like the first time I saw her, I did like a quadruple take and I'm like, no, wow. It was nuts. People get crazy. And then, you know, they gain most of it back. And then you just longingly look at your photos like, oh, remember when I was, you know, half my body at my wedding? Like, those were the days.
Yeah, so it's freaky deaky stuff, and it's not healthy. And it's not, like you said, it's not sustainable. And also, the big thing I preach about health and wellness, and you know, I love running, and tonight I'm going to go and do this weird workout called CX Works. I forgot what it's called, but it's like a half an hour, like fun HIIT training stuff. You just get it done, get out of there. But I really love it for my mental health, you know. So
yes.
my big thing is to sort of find you know. Preaching this idea that you find something you really like doing, and whether that's softball or doing weights or jogging or whatever, find an activity that you love and, you know, join groups, find accountability people, but don't starve and wear your shitty sweating for the wedding merchandise to make you feel better when it's probably not making you feel good.
Totally. Well, it's funny. Yeah. I know you love running. I read that you came up with your podcast idea on a run, as did I, because we're the same.
Yes. We're the same.
That's awesome.
I love it. Tell me about your running. How far do you run? What do you listen to podcasts? Do you listen to music? Talk me through your routine.
I always listen to music and it's the same playlist every time, which is ridiculous. But I don't even know. I mean, I add songs every now and again, but they're like ridiculous songs, like songs I loved in college. Like, I don't know. Like, I have, well, this is not from college, but I have like Soulja Boy, you know, like things like ridiculous, terrible music that every time I play, I put my Spotify on private so nobody sees what I'm listening to. And I'll run like 3 to 4 miles, you know, like I pretty much run every day, except maybe like I take one day off here or there.
Great. That's great.
Getting it out, blowing the steam literally off.
I like running this time of year, you know, in the winter, it's sort of crispy. And you can also feel really smug when you see your fellow runners and you give them a little nod and you go, oh, it's shitty weather, but I'm out here. I'm pounding the ground.
Well, I'm on the treadmill. So go you for being out there.
Oh, I don't have a treadmill, but I do like to see the outside world occasionally. So it works for me. But, you know,
amazing.
It's you do what you do.
Yeah.
You do what you do.
What about you and your running?
Well, sort of the same. I like to listen to podcasts when I run, and everyone thinks I'm a bit of a freak for that, but I find it distracting and I like to learn. And
that's
I listen
good.
To my business podcasts, and you know, I love a bit of Pat Flynn and Shalene Johnson and all these people who just
I
learn things and then make little notes in my head to go home and go, I'll learn about email segmentation. And This American Life. I've love cranking through the podcast, but I'm not a long distance runner. I love a, you know, is very similar to you. 3 or 4 miles is quite satisfying. And yeah. My legs go, you're old now. Go home.
Well, mine go like, I'm tired now. Give me food.
Yeah.
So did you run on your wedding day? Because I'm, you know, thinking about, since that's the number one thing I do to manage my stress, I'm definitely planning on doing a run on the morning of my wedding.
I think that's a really good idea. I did not, only because we spent, most of the wedding morning still setting up our venue. We DIY'd the shit out of our wedding, and it was only because of our lovely friends who jumped in and helped us too that we actually made it to the physical wedding. So, good stories, but I would advise people to get a planner or someone to help them. But my best friend got married in Byron Bay in Australia 2 years ago, and she got up in the morning and ran 10 kilometers and said it was the best thing for her head. So I think if that's your zone, or do some yoga or do something, but, you know, take that time for you to actually just sort of get in the zone and shed some of that mental shit, if that's what helps you.
Yeah. Well, you had said you just recorded a podcast about like mindfulness and self-care. And, you know, I'm wondering if that you have any other, you know, advice for like day of stress and chill and literally chilling out. My wedding planner is actually coincidentally really into essential oils and uses those for managing stress on the day of.
Good.
I did not learn this till into, you know, working with him, but that works for me. I'm happy with that. I'm just curious if like you have other advice for people on the day of their wedding, or I mean, any of this in my mind is so applicable to every big event, you know, so you have your big wedding day, but you also have like a big speech that you're giving at work, you know, or you have a big, I don't know, vacation that you're going on that you're excited about, you know, all these big days. What have you found that's been, you know, helpful for your listeners?
Well, I actually think, and as you said, it doesn't have to be wedding related. And I think stand-up's one of those things that everyone has their little routines, and you learn when, you know, how people go about getting through that anxiety or nervousness or a little bit of, you know, like internal hype and adrenaline, exactly. And I love talking to comedians about their routine. And a lot of people are really stuck in the way, their habits, and will only do certain things. Like, I never drank and talked because I just thought I'd be sloppy jalopy and I'd fuck it up.
Totally.
But so many people are like, I have 3 beers before I go. And I'm like, oh my God, I'd be a mess and I would be unconscious. But, you know, I think it's also just having time in your own head, and whether that is listening to a podcast, going for a run, playing some PlayStation, whatever it might be that, you know, I like shooting things and not appropriate for this. I like shooting things on PlayStation 4, and everyone comes to our house and assumes it's my husband's PlayStation. I'm like, no, Call of Duty is my homegirl.
No, so, that's so funny.
But I think people wouldn't assume, but I think it's whatever takes your brain to that sort of neutral place. I also really love The Real Housewives, various franchise. I like them all. But it's like dumb stuff that gets my brain to that, you know, nothing zone that actually really helps me relax and chill.
I love that. So
it's all trash.
Play PlayStation on the day of your wedding.
I would think that's amazing. If you want to do that, shoot some shit up, you know, play some Grand Theft Auto. I was going to go bad with that. I'm not doing this on your podcast. I'm sorry.
So my pre-stand-up routine was basically not thinking about it until like 2 seconds before I was going to go on. Just like literally like doing every single thing possible to like not tell myself I was about to get on stage. And then right before I'd go on, I would like go into the bathroom and basically like just like dance or like run in place, like, or like army run in place, just like literally like shake my body in crazy ways to just move that adrenaline so I didn't just like pass out.
It's hard, isn't it? Because it's, I think I used to go through, I went through stages, and I've done lots of long form, like I did Sydney and Melbourne comedy festivals. And I think it's my brain shifts when I'm doing like a 5 minute or a 20 minute set versus like an hour where you're like, oh, fuck, this is a lot of shit to try and store in your brain.
Yeah.
But it's a different, to me, it was always a different mindset of preparing for a longer show and also just doing it over and over again. You just sort of get into that routine. But, you know, when you're finding that new material moment where you're just like, oh my God, just make this work so I don't have to do the walk of shame, even though we've all done the walk of shame.
The walk of shame. Yeah, the walk of shame.
Oy. Still coming back. Flashbacks.
Yes, I know. I haven't done stand-up in a while. I've thought about getting back into it, but I don't want to go out at night and to these really unhealthy places. I know.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It does suck.
So funny. We need what's that thing where now everyone's doing these like disco, not like, I think they're like silent discos in the morning, like the Get Down. Is that?
Yeah.
I feel like.
In London called Morning Glory, and it's when all the like the young suburban bourgeois hippies go before they go to their high powered, you know, like Wall Street jobs, they go and pretend to be hippies in the morning. And I love it. I've got friends that do it, but they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and then go and rave,
have
a shower and just go to work. But it's all booze and booze
so
and
funny.
Drug free.
Yeah. That we need that for stand up.
Yeah, we do.
Let's start.
Just do a casual 6 o'clock gig and a nana gig.
Yeah, that. Oh my God, brunch, a little brunch.
If I could just be at home by dinner time, that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. So, okay, so that's kind of on the same topic of what I want to talk about next, which is traditions. So I guess that was a nice little segue I just inserted right there.
I
love that you say when it comes to traditions, bride chillas question traditions. They ditch those that aren't meaningful to them and embrace the ones that are. And I've been doing that as I've been planning my wedding. I mean, we're not having bridal parties. We're just, we're not doing it. It's not who we are. I'm not big into cliques. I'm not big into everyone wearing the same thing. We each have one sibling. They're going to stand by us. And that's the whole deal. We're not doing a rehearsal dinner.
Good.
You know, I was just listening to one of your episodes before this where you were like shitting on rehearsal dinners.
Yeah,
I was laughing so hard. Well, you said that it's only an American thing?
Yeah, I don't understand them. It wasn't until I started doing this and, you know, I get lots of emails from people all over the place and they're always like, what's the right thing to do here? And I'm always like, geez, I don't know. It depends where you live because there are so many different rules of what is expected of you. But in Australia and Britain especially, we have the rehearsal dinners like a whole nother wedding that I think is insane.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea. But yet everyone sort of unquestioningly does it. And I think it's when you see at the outside world and you go, no one else does this. It's just you guys. You don't have to do it. It's like giving people permission to go, oh, good. We thought it was stupid too. Let's ditch it.
Well, in general, how do you suggest people feel that permission? Because for me, I mean, I've just always been cool doing my own thing. That's just who I am. I don't know. I've been trying to think back to like if my parents taught me this, they must have, or at least encouraged it. I just don't care. Like if there's a tradition of a rehearsal dinner, I don't care because I don't want to do it. And, you know, instead, actually what we're doing is, which is really fun, the weekend before our wedding, we're taking our like closest 30 people to us to a beach, our favorite beach, and we're spending the weekend there with them. And we thought about getting married on this beach, but instead we're doing like a rehearsal weekend with just our favorite people in the world. And then we'll have our wedding the next week and that's it.
I think the biggest thing is when you say about giving yourself permission, the thing anyone needs to remember, like organizing a wedding or any sort of big event that's attached to tradition, is that tradition is only what, you know, you want it to be. You don't have to do any of this stuff. To get hitched, all you need is another person, preferably the person you want to marry. And if you want to make it legal, someone to make it legal. That is it. And this idea that you have to do anything really, you know, can fall by the wayside when you give yourself permission to go, look, we don't want a rehearsal dinner, or we don't want to have 400 of our closest friends that we haven't seen for, you know, 15 years to come along because we had drunk promises of, I promise you're going to be at my wedding or you're going to be my bridesmaid.
Mm.
In bride chiller land, drunk promises don't mean anything. And I think it's, you know, it all comes down to people going, but my parents would be disappointed or my parents won't understand. And for me, it's about having really good open channels of communication of just going, listen, mum and dad, this is the day for us that is about us. And today we choose not to have a rehearsal dinner. And also we're going to save $5,000 or whatever.
A lot of money.
Yeah, it's just so much money.
Oh my God.
I just find that so strange. So I think, you know, as obvious and as cliche as it might sound, it's about being able to communicate why you don't want to do something and explain it to the people that might be having an opinion. And also, you can't make everyone happy all the time, especially with weddings, because people are insane.
Totally. And everyone has their own opinion and everyone has their own, you know, must-dos and traditions and all that. And it's interesting. I love that you say, you know, explain and communicate, because our rabbi who we're working with to like build the ceremony or whatever is really adamant about only doing traditions that mean something to us. And
great.
So we're talking to him about all the different traditions because we don't really know why any of them exist. You know, like,
yeah.
We're like, why are there bridesmaids? He's like, and he told us that it's because, I guess, in the past, they were supposed to make the bride feel like she had an entourage or something.
Well, there's another sort of angle is to say it used to be because of curses and demons, so that if someone was going to come and put a curse on the bride on her wedding day, is that if there's a whole bunch of other chicks that are dressed the same, they won't know who to put the curse on. So they're the, you know, like the
who was
going to
curse?
Well, just some bad someone who didn't get invited
Baltimore?
To the wedding. I don't know.
Oh my God.
But it's true. If you question, I think a lot of people blindly sort of go, oh, you have to do this because it's tradition. And, you know, there's a great conversation that's happening recently on the in the community and talking about name changing and someone sort of saying, and this is a big topic, but the idea that one of the bride chillers was saying, well, I talked to my partner, I really want to keep my name. And of course, it should be your right to do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah.
But she sort of said, and my partner said, well, you should change it because it's tradition. Mm. And her going, yeah, but does it mean anything to us? You know,
right.
Like why? And I think it's that step back of going, why do you need to do this? Why do you feel so obliged to do it? But we should be doing this with a lot of decisions in our lives,
yes,
not just about weddings.
Totally.
Let's just take a moment, think about it, question it, do your research, and then make a decision. But don't just jump into it because you feel like you should be doing something. Shoulda, coulda, wouldas are just a waste of time. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, I love that. I love the idea of just questioning the wedding is just such a great metaphor for life. I mean, everything. Like, why is there a flower girl? You know, do you know why, actually?
No. Just some way to get a cute kid in the wedding.
Well,
I don't know.
We're not having a flower girl. We're having a no kid policy.
Right.
I decided no kids. So, I mean, like, screw it, you know, and it's funny because the demon thing with the bridesmaids, I mean, that's hilarious. And that just literally sounds like something out of Harry Potter or something.
Yeah.
So when you think about that and that's the tradition, then why, like, you have to wonder why it is the way it is now. I mean, it's completely changed into a different tradition, which is like showing off how cool you are because you have a clique of girls that will dress up with you and take photos with you and get you drunk at a party in matching bathing suits.
Exactly. You know?
Like, but that's not for everyone.
Yeah, but then you talk to bridesmaids and they're like, I don't want this job. I don't want to do
this. Oh, I know.
So it's like this weird thing of this obligation of going, well, I should ask Nancy. We were friends in college.
Yes.
Oh, but I don't really want any bridesmaids. And then Nancy's going, oh, please, God, don't ask me.
Yes.
I don't want to. Okay, yay, I'll be a bridesmaid.
Oh, my God.
And then Nancy becomes now this, I think, is really insane. All of these pre-wedding events that people seem really like nonchalant, like totally devoted to going, oh yeah, we're going to do a bridal shower, we're going to do a bachelorette party that is now sort of like an international vacation for
yes.
some reason they've evolved.
Yeah,
you're like, who the fuck has the time and the money to be taking time off work to paying all this money and then they're still going on, you know, the wedding events, not even associated with the pre-wedding stuff. So it's like become this huge blown up thing where everyone feels obligated to spend all this money and you just sort of get trapped in this zone of going, I'll shell out more money. All right, we've got to buy a dress. Great. We've got to buy another dress for the rehearsal dinner. We've got to buy another dress for the
right,
you know, bachelorette.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
It is. And it all comes back to communication, like you said. I mean, in that example, if people had just said, you know, just said the truth, what they were feeling, all of that craziness wouldn't have escalated. And that's what I did with my best friend. So she was a maid of honor for somebody else. And the whole time she was just complaining to me. Like, she was miserable. Like, she had to buy the something blue and the something for the thing. And then she had to do this. And it was like so expensive, so stressful. And she was miserable. So when I got engaged, I actually, and you're supposed to like, nowadays you're supposed to like ask somebody to be your bridesmaid or maid of honor or whatever, you know, present it to them so they can post it on Instagram that they were offered the position, you know, because they're number one. So I made this like PowerPoint for her and not like I like a little slideshow thing and I presented it to her and it was like, because you're my best friend and I love you so much and will you not be my maid of honor? Because I want you to wear whatever the hell you want to my wedding. I want you to not have to spend a bajillion dollars and be so stressed planning all the shit for me. Just enjoy it and be my best friend. And oh my gosh, very proud about that move.
You get 10 gold chiller bride stars for that.
Yes!
That's a smooth move. I'm very proud of you.
You can suggest that to your peeps. I'm happy to share the PowerPoint.
Oh, I would you know they would dig that so hard.
That's awesome.
Because so many people, I think, go, oh, I should, probably should have bridesmaids, and then feel exactly the same way as you. And then the bridesmaids feel happy going, great, I can just turn up, have a dance, wear a great frock that I choose, and go home.
Right.
The end.
And still, you know, we can take special photos together and, you know, you're still my best friend. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I just want to encourage people to do them, to be authentic and to go against the traditions if they so feel, or at least question them, you know, like, why is there a flower girl? We don't know. You didn't know. You're the expert. I don't know. I'm a person. And so maybe you don't need a flower girl. Like, just because everyone else does it, you know?
Yeah. And I think there's so many little aspects, if you know, great little listener exercise now to think about the last two weddings you've been to. And think about how many, what was the memorable moment? Like, what do you think of when you think about that wedding and why did it work? Or, you know, why was it boring? Or why was it exciting? Or whatever. And, you know, 99% of the time, it was nothing to do with what sort of favors were on the table or what color napkins or, you know, these pissy little details that everyone freaks out about. It's about laughing and dancing and having a really great time and you know, actual emotional moments. So it just goes back to this idea of feeling obliged to focus on crazy details that are completely, you know, forgettable after about 10 seconds of seeing them, especially because we've all got goldfish brains right now. You know, we Instagram everything and maybe we don't. Good on you. But it's this idea that, you know, there's more to life than worrying about crappy wedding shit.
Fuck chair covers. Hashtag. So hashtag. Speaking of not caring, you know, about what other people think, let's talk about something I think is one of your favorite topics, which is obligatory guests.
Oh, yeah. I hate that so much. I love it. But I don't like the idea that we feel obliged to invite people to our wedding that we wouldn't ever go out for dinner with or spend time with, you know, outside of our wedding time.
I know.
It sort of becomes the bane of your existence, trying to cut people off a list or go, I should keep them because they're my mum's second cousin and she said they would come. And you're just like, why would you invite these people to the most, you know, personal, I don't want to say most important day of your life, but one of these personal, intimate days of your existence, and to have someone there that you have to fake smile at. I hate that.
But what do you do? I mean, so many people, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest sources of unchillness about weddings that people experience, where, you know, they have their parents who want to invite people, or, you know, you told some, like the drunken promises. Like, I definitely have a few of those people where I'm like, I'm either going to have to just do it or like say sorry. I mean, so what, like, do you have any advice on what people do about these people
I've
that
got
they
so
feel
much
like,
advice.
Oh my God, tell us the advice.
I got so much advice. Well, firstly, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to creating a guest list, my advice to you is don't tell – I mean, yes, there are drunk promises. We all have – I've made so many drunk promises in my life. Oh, my gosh. But other people are drunk
like what?
Also
What's
and they
a
don't –
drunk promise?
Oh, I'm a really generous drunk person.
Okay.
And I'm just like, you can definitely come and stay at our house for 2 weeks. And it's like, oh, fuck no. I don't want you at my house for 2 weeks. I need to at my house in 2 hours. So – You know, sometimes my husband's got to put his little hand on my knee just going, hey, babe, shut it down. Too generous. Yeah, but that's taken a few years. The idea that, you know, you sit down and you sort of, I suggest you do a brain dump of people that you know that you may be in the periphery of the guest list area. And both of you sit down. And if your parents, you know, are what I call wedding donors, people that like to give you money,
wedding
potentially.
Donors.
A wedding donor, you know, I've said this a few times on the podcast, and people might be sick of hearing me say this, but a wedding donor is like a political donor. They come in and they say, we don't want anything. We just believe in your cause. Here's some money. And you know deep down that is not true. They are lobbyists. They've got different things they want to push. So you need to treat them like that, and you need to figure out what their intentions are. And from the get-go, go, where do you expect this money to go and what is attached to this money? And if you know that from the get-go, you know that, all right, mum and dad want 10 guests, fine. There's your 10 guests, mm-hmm. but, you know, or that, you know, they're going to be major pains in the ass for this money. Is it worth accepting the money, or do you just pay for it yourself and live through it? So mm-hmm. I think, you know, this is different parents, different situations. But I do think if you can do the brain dump and you go, all right, we've got a venue that seats 100, but I've got 400 people on the list, obviously you got to hack that list.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I always sort of say, you know, people that you work with, really, do you think that you'll be working at that place for the next 25 years? Will it be a problem if you don't? I mean, I had lots of people we didn't invite to our wedding, and I just grinned and bared it really and said, we're having a small wedding. So
yeah.
Sorry. Love to have you there, whatever. But also, plus ones are a huge thing that I think people assume that they can bring their boyfriend that they've been out on 3 fucking Tinder dates to, and you're like, go to a restaurant, not my wedding. So we set up like little rules. We're like, if we both haven't met the partner, unless
yes.
they live 50 million miles away, then they ain't coming to the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you just have to set up boundaries, but also really stick to it when it comes to, you know, creating a list and realizing that if you have to fake smile to greet that person, then they should not be at your wedding. They should not be people that you don't genuinely go, oh my God, I am so happy to see you. Thank you for sharing this amazing day with me.
Yes.
Because what's the point of creating all of this stuff when you have to fake it? Ugh, don't want to do it.
I'm literally a butterflies in my stomach right now just because I love everything you're saying. And it's so aligned with what I say about healthy eating. You know, I always say I'd rather you eat French fries with a smile than Brussels sprouts with a bitch face.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Brussels sprouts. I mean, teach me. I really want to love them.
Well,
I don't know.
Then either try cooking them, you know, roasting them a little olive oil, salt, pepper, you could put a little balsamic or mustard and toss it with the olive oil, roast it. If you don't love them, then don't eat them the same way as don't invite that person to your wedding. You know, our life
yes.
is too short and precious to be having people at our wedding that we don't want to act, that we have to fake smile for, or eating fruits or vegetables that are told to be healthy for us, but we don't actually like, or even going to dinner on like a Tuesday with some friend who says they want to see you, but like you're not really into them.
Oh my God. There's my favorite little Instagram. I don't really like inspirational posts that much because I feel like most of them are bullshit. But one of the things that I reposted a few days ago was just stop saying yes to shit you hate. And
yes,
like I'm not a tattoo person, but I really feel like that's who should be tattooed on a lot of us to go, listen, so much of our lives, we go, yeah, Tuesday night, I want to be at home. I want to be watching Netflix. I want to be in stretchy pants and I don't want to wear a bra. So that means I don't probably want to go out to your gig at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And
exactly.
Yet we feel obliged to go, well, I want to support you, or yeah, I'll do it, because we feel uncomfortable saying no. But, you know, this is a big problem all around. But I do think we do need to stop saying yes to shit we hate. Stop saying, you know, I like to phase people out. This sounds so harsh. But if I don't
– Do we need to prevent some people from listening to this episode?
Oh, bring it. Come on. But, you know, like if people don't make you feel good, if you see someone in your life that when you come home from that, you know, event of seeing them, if you don't feel positive about it and they don't make you feel good about yourself, then I think you need to question why you continue to see this person. And yet we all go through ups and downs in friendships, but there's certainly been people in my life that I'm like, you don't make me feel good about myself. And this has been an ongoing situation. You're gone. You're gone. And it's hard, but it feels good when you don't have to deal with it.
Totally. I mean, at the end of the day, like, do you feel good?
I feel good. I feel like that was a bit of a lecture series. I do apologize.
No, I thought that was an inspiring segment. It was very inspiring. Just you do you, you know? At the end of the day, yes. We have one life. It's pretty short, and we should not spend it fake smiling for anything.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Who has time for the fake smile?
No. So one thing that's been really actually, I think our biggest stress for our wedding is the food. Shocker. You know, so considering my livelihood is about healthy food, I want our food to be clean and amazing and farm to table and very planty. Nice. But, you know, not everybody wants vegan pizzas and kale salads, even though that's what I feel most connected to, an authentic serving. I feel like I have to serve steak, even though that's not really on brand for me as a human. So what do I do?
I think you've got to go back to you do you. This is like the day that represents you as a couple. And I think if that is the sort of food that you live by and live for and are passionate about, then I think it's also a great opportunity for people who don't normally eat, you know, all the plant-based stuff and feel like they would ever explore different options that you, you know, are passionate about. I think it's a fantastic way to maybe say, hey, come into our gig, we're paying for it.
Yeah.
Shut up and eat it.
Thank you.
Why would you have a steak? If steak is not something that, you know, you agree with or even feel passionately about, then fuck that. No steak. No steak.
Oof. All right. Wow. Woo, woo. I feel a little liberated.
Do you need me
anxious
to make some calls?
I might.
I feel like sometimes I am more like attitude-y and I share my stuff, and then some bride chillers are like, great, could you just now call the wedding planner, or could you just call my mother-in-law and tell her that?
I know. I might need you. Good thing I have your number, so we'll circle back to that.
I'm ready.
Is there a very like planty signature cocktail you've had at a wedding that you remember with fondness?
Well, you know what? I haven't been to many weddings in the UK, but in Australia, we love, you know, we love a flowery cocktail. Mm-hmm. We love elderflowers, and we love to put, oh my gosh, can I just Google while we're talking what this thing's called?
Yeah, please.
It's a plant, it's a flower. Oh, it's hibiscus.
Good. Oh, nice.
Just came to me. So if you Google, there's a company in Australia that make these amazing hibiscus flowers in a jar. And you put the hibiscus in the bottom of a champagne glass, and then you put the champagne over it, and it flowers and flavors the champagne. And it is amazing. And I don't know why it is not like, you know, something everywhere all over the world. But I've seen it, this hibiscus jar being sold. It's called Wild Hibiscus Flowers in Syrup. And you can, it's really nice, but it gives this lovely sort of light flavoring.
That sounds wonderful.
And it looks really pretty and they're delicious. And you've just inspired me for the holidays to buy some of this online and have some at Christmas time.
I want to buy it online and have some at Christmas time and at wedding time.
It's really great. I've just been looking online and you can buy it all over the place. Amazon have got it. But it's
great.
It's a way to make a little bit of Prosecco look really fancy if you put these flowers in it. They're cool.
Well, that's very planty.
Mm.
Well
and
done.
And you can eat it at the end and it tastes sort of crunchy and delicious.
Awesome. Thanks for that.
No props.
Thanks.
I want to drink that now.
I know. Craving it. That sounds so good. I'm going to load it up on Amazon when we get off the phone.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that a lot of brides have like post-wedding depression?
Yeah.
I had no good segue for that. I just jumped right into that deep question.
No, I liked it a lot. I liken it to post-show depression of when you're in a play or you've done a gig and you don't have to do that anymore. And I think that we become really like in the zone, or when you're training for a marathon or you're training for, you know, you've got some big event at work on it.
Or vacation.
Oh my God, yes.
I get so depressed after vacations.
Exactly. You're like, what the hell? My life is over now. What am I going to live for?
What do I look forward to now?
I've got nothing. But that's when you start the next vacation and you're like, I've got no money, but I need this. I need this.
Put something on the calendar to count down to.
And I think weddings, like, that's just like another aspect of feeling, you know, a little bit in the zone with organizing, and you realize that every night has been spent doing some inane piece of DIY that you probably could have bought on Etsy, but you wanted to commit to it. But then you realize halfway through it's a waste of your time. And don't DIY, just get someone else to do it for you. That's my real suggestion, everyone.
Good to know.
DIY without the why is my thing.
DIY without the why. What's the worst thing you like that you regret most DIYing for your wedding?
I regret, well, actually, the whole setup on the day. We should have hired someone, like a wedding coordinator.
Like a day of wedding planner?
Yeah. I think it's great to feel, you know, that you want to be in control, blah, blah, blah. Now, we were tight asses. We were a bit broke. We didn't have a bunch of money. And I think now in hindsight, the experience of setting up and getting all our friends on board was great. But also, I literally was wearing jeans and, you know, a t-shirt up until an hour before our wedding. And then someone went, Alicia, the hair and makeup artist here, why don't you go and sit down? And then I sort of sprinted to this little other little house we had at had on the property to get ready. And that was really fun. And we all had a bit of a laugh, but it was also like, oh shit, I had no downtime.
Wow.
And I think if there was a planner or someone there to help us, we would have probably had a little bit more chiller time.
Yeah.
But, you know, you learn.
Exactly. And that's why you're now inspiring people to put more chilla into their bride. Chilla.
Exactly. You said it. Let's get that on a t-shirt.
Say that great, but.
But I do think you've got a value, and it's the same with any task, whether you're running a small business, if you're a solopreneur.
Look at you, Pat Flynn.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like a. It's like I've joined a cult. But it is this idea over the last 3 years of working full time and doing the podcast. I really value my own time. And I think that I used to be a bit cheap and just going, no, I'll try and reprogram my website and I'll spend all of, you know, Saturday morning doing one HTML fix that I want to kill myself after doing.
Yeah.
Or just going, let's go on Upwork or Fiverr and just pay someone $50 and they finish it in an hour. And I can move on with my life. And I think it comes to the point of going, we really need to value our time in a more positive light. And that's not just to do with weddings, it's to do with everything. And having that notion of going, my time where I could be sitting with my husband or doing something else is far more valuable than dicking around with my website.
Yeah, you could be playing video games.
I know.
I mean, that's so much better than HTML.
Or having a conversation.
Wow.
Or feeling, you know, going
eating
for
something
a run.
Great, avocado toast.
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, Australians, we love an avocado toast.
Yes, you guys are like the originals of that.
We're the OGs of the avocado toast. We know how to charge for it. We love a bit of feta on top and a little bit of, what would you don't call it coriander, cilantro.
Oh, well, we call cilantro the leaf. Coriander is like the dried herb that you can sprinkle on things.
Very strange. But, you know, I live in England where they call a zucchini a courgette. And
what was that? What do they call it?
A courgette. And if you say the word zucchini, it's like you might as well have gone, you know, penis. They have no idea what you're talking about. And they also like a capsicum. Do you use the word capsicum?
No.
Oh, okay. It's just Australia. Maybe Australia and New Zealand. That's a pepper.
Oh.
But we would.
Very scientific, it sounds.
A capsicum. I think it isn't actually a scientific name.
Yeah.
We'll Google that later. But lots of different food things. You're like, why can't I buy this? And then you realize they've changed the name.
Arugula is something. You guys call something arugula that we don't,
rocket.
Right? Oh, rocket. You call arugula rocket. Yes. That's a hoot. That is arugula. Random.
It sounds like a dance. Arugula.
Rocket. How is that a plant?
I don't know. I've never questioned that, but now I'm going to have to do some deep thought.
Yeah. Please do. So what is your personal favorite plant to eat on that note?
Can I say a sweet potato?
Yeah, that's mine, actually.
I love it. Is it?
That and green apples.
Oh, see, I'm a royal gala apple girl, but I do, or a pink lady. I don't know if they're international.
How about you saying that's cute? Say it again.
A pink lady.
Pink lady.
It's cute. A great apple. It's a good apple.
It is.
It's a little bit
those.
More expensive. Yeah, yeah.
They're small. They're quite small, usually.
Yeah, but they're not too tart, though. They've got a bit of a sweetness. Mm-hmm. I love a sweet potato because I think it's one of the most versatile starches, but it's low GI, so you don't feel like you're a big fat, you know, like, after you eat it. I like it roasted. I like it with paprika. And I love it mashed. There's so many different ways, and I delight in it. I'm thinking about eating it right now.
It's so good. It's my literally, it's my like when you say low GI, like it's my quote unquote safe food where whenever I have a stomach ache or I'm nervous or stressed and I would eat something that would probably give me a stomach ache, I go to sweet potato because it's just so easy to digest and just gives my tummy the loving it needs.
Oh, it's great. And it's one of those things that you can put in a pan and fry, or, you know, you can bake it and have lovely crispy. I like it with a bit of like wasabi mayo. Ooh. Oh my gosh.
Fancy.
So many things. Oh, so many things. It sounds fancy. You just put wasabi and some mayo and you just blend it all up.
And then call it wasabi mayo.
Yeah. And it sounds like something from not Gordon Ramsay, but someone posh. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not at all.
Do you eat avocado toast?
Do I eat avocado toast?
Do you make it all the time?
I do. I make it a lot. Our avocado consumption is high in this household. And I don't like people heating avocados up. I think that's criminal.
Ooh, who's done that?
Sometimes, and it might be just the Brits because they're sometimes a little out of touch with fresh food. bitchy. But sometimes they'll do like a sandwich, but they'll put avocado in it and heat it up, or they'll put cheese, I'll cut the avocado in half and put melted cheese on it and put it under a grill. And I'm like, this is not what you should be doing with an avocado.
No.
They're a cold item.
Yeah, they're supposed to be raw. They're supposed to be left alone.
It's sort of weird.
Weird.
Sometimes I've bitten into a sandwich and I'm like, oh, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Weird. Yep. You got to teach them what's up.
Oh, I've tried. Don't you worry.
They just don't listen.
They're not into it, but they, you know, they're starting to pick up on it. When you go to cafes and you get a bit of lovely bit of sourdough with some avocado and a bit of drizzle of olive oil, you go, great, you're improving.
Nice.
Thank you.
They're on trend.
Yeah.
Do you
still
have a favorite?
$7.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I think I've paid $12 for an avocado toast before.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Got on the same page. When you can make it at home in like 30 seconds for nothing. Great.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Exactly.
Do you have a favorite planty restaurant in London?
I do not. Let me just think about that. I'm a very big fan of Japanese food.
Mm.
And there is an excellent Japanese restaurant called Oka in London. And they do have, I've been there with lots of vegetarian and vegan people.
Perfect.
I'm not either of those, but I would happily eat a plant-based diet. And if meat went away, I'd be fine. But they do serve a lovely selection of vegetarian Japanese food, and it's delicious.
Oka.
I love it.
Oka.
OKA, and
nice.
It's on King's Road in Chelsea. And that's where, if you've ever seen a very trashy show called Made in Chelsea, that's where they film a lot of that. I don't imagine a lot of your listeners have, but if they like a bit of late night trash, they might have seen it.
Is that a Bravo show?
It's like a Bravo show, exactly. And it's like they are quite genuinely wealthy, toffee-nosed. But these sort of girls that always talk like this, you know, and they're very like, they've gone on gap year. And they've got, they say, daddy, my daddy says this. And always the boyfriend's always like Sebastian. And you know, you're like, fuck off. But they do exist. And it's a fun place to visit to see those sort of people.
Wonderful. That will be on my must visit list next time I'm in London.
London tourism. Well, you call me and I'll take you there.
Yeah. Great. Is there a book that maybe has inspired you in some way or like helped you become as chill and, you know, not giving a fuck as you are?
Oh my gosh. There's so many. I mean, I love a good comedy book. I love a good, you know, book of essays. You know, I love David Sedaris. I love Simon Rich. So I think from that perspective, I use reading as a way to sort of zone out and chill out. And I would love to write a book of essays one day. So I think I very much aspire. I read those stories and feel very motivated, which is really fun. I think from a comedian's point of view as well, to go, you don't have to write, your material doesn't have to be for stage all the time. And I think sometimes we forget that, which is just nice to have, you know, these ridiculous stories that seem to happen to all of us, but being able to put them onto the paper.
Do you think it's like a comedian thing? I'm just thinking of this right now. Maybe it's a comedian thing to be okay going against the grain. Or, I mean, I guess that's what comedians do. They point out the shared craziness that everyone's doing blindly or saying or experiencing and are okay being different. I just kind of realized this now talking to you that maybe that's why you and I both are like preaching messages of don't just do things because everyone else does them. Have your own perspective, be authentic, go against the grain, all that.
I think that's a really good summation of our characteristics and also this idea that to get up and tell jokes. I mean, I really resent people that go, you're so brave. It's so brave. And I'm like, it's not brave.
You're just telling the truth.
It's just a gig. Yeah, you write something, you practice it, you stand up. It doesn't always go well, but sometimes it's amazing. You go home, you think about it, you go to bed and do it all again. And I don't think braveness, I think that's the wrong, it's certainly the wrong way I would describe what we do. But it's the idea that you start to see things more as, you know, these little moments that happen in your life. You know, I carry around a book still and write down things because I think, well, one day I'll be able to use them again. And I use them to talk about on the podcast and stuff. So I think it's just changing your perception a little bit to see how, you know, something silly that happens on the train on the way to work or whatever could be turned into a bit or a story one day.
Totally. So, I was watching the Jerry Seinfeld documentary that's on Netflix.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah. And in the intro, he said something, I don't remember the exact wording, but it was of the concept that he realized at a young age that like he didn't have to, I guess, like do what everyone else was doing. That he could talk about what everyone else is doing, but not do it. And I think that's kind of the name of the game here.
I think that documentary and, you know, he did comedian years and years ago when he left, when he retired his shtick and went back to writing. And that's a great documentary. But then seeing this new one that's just sort of appeared and talking about his beginnings, to me, anyone that is interested in writing or learning about the art of stand-up, to me, it was such a great view, you know, looking into his world. And he talks about comedy so well anyway.
Yeah.
But I really sat there and with a huge grin the whole time. It's such a delightful piece of, you know, television. I loved it.
Yeah, he's great. I'm so glad you loved it. Yay.
Oh, I think we both share an adoration of that man.
Yes.
That he will not let us down.
Totally. Have you seen him perform?
No, I haven't. I went to see the premiere of B Movie and then accosted him, stood very close to him like I'd been next to some sort of deity and then had to go and have a sit down. I was too overwhelmed. I would love to see him live. I would absolutely love it.
We've seen him a few times. He's really, really, really good, obviously. You know, the biggest thing for me was, so when I lost my grandmother, she died a bunch of years ago. I remember we got, this is just on the topic of comedy, we got all these freaking edible arrangement fruit baskets in the mail. And everyone kept saying, like, my condolences, give your mom my condolences, like, share my condolences. And I just thought, I mean, I don't know what was going on. I think this was like right when I started doing stand up. So I had that, like, let's find the funny in every single thing.
Yeah.
And I just found these fruit baskets ridiculous. I found the condolences insane. And I wrote a whole set on the fruit baskets. Now they come to your house and then you have to care for the fruit and you're mourning and the fruit's dying. You have to put it in plastic bags off the sticks in the fridge. It was really, I was very passionate about it. But I did this bit on condolences. Like, what the hell are condolences? Why do I want them? Why are you giving them to me? What are they? And I, like, right around that time, read an article about Jerry Seinfeld. I think it was in the New York Times. And he talked about how you can find the funny in everything. And he's like, for example, if I went to, you know, if I lost somebody and everyone just kept saying condolences, I would do a bit about condolences. And I printed that, or I cut it out of the paper and framed it. And I made this shrine because I just felt like so inspired and connected and on point and just lit up about our shared condolences.
I love that so much. And my whole beginnings, the first sort of gig or two I did was based around I was in a long-term relationship far before I met Rich, and I was engaged, and the guy that I was engaged to, my ex-fiance, pulled the plug 5 weeks before our wedding.
Wow.
And yeah, it was heavy stuff, but I would start telling this story over and over again of this, like, this shitty saga. And there were lots of little caveats to this story that I think actually ended up, because I got sick of people feeling sorry for me, that I would twist it a little bit and do some, you know, I turned it into shtick unintentionally so I could get through telling this awful, you know, depressing story. And then eventually, you know, after a couple of months, there was a stand-up comedy competition that was happening called Raw Comedy in Australia, and it's run by a youth radio station, and they run these heats all over the country. And I just said, fuck it, I'm going to get up. I'm going to rewrite the tale of woe and see how it goes. This could be my chance. And it was the most cathartic experience. And so it was about canceling a wedding, which the irony of all of this is that, you know, now I talk about weddings.
I know. This is incredible. Do you talk about this experience?
Yeah. Now? In the first, you listen to the 001 episode of my show, I'll tell a little bit. I tell a bit of this intro, but, you know, and I'm writing it's going to be published in March, called The Bridezilla Survival Guide, and there's a whole couple of chapters about
Congrats.
This without being
That's awesome.
Thank you. That was like a really blatant plug unintentionally. but you know, it's really cathartic to write about your personal experiences and also find humor in
yes.
the darkness. And to me, it was the best gift anyone could have given me of like finding my voice and finding this way to turn something that was pretty shit into, you know, a funny story that people would go, oh, that poor girl, but also, oh, she's all right. She's fine.
Yeah.
She's carrying on. And that to me, you know, has given me so many opportunities over the last 10 years to write stuff that maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable about saying in a small group of friends, but you can say to thousands of people.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's what your show's about too, you know, helping those thousands of people through talking about stuff like this and making
yeah.
them feel like, who gives a fuck about, what is it, the chair covers?
Yeah,
it's my new
chair
favorite
covers.
Saying.
Fuck chair covers. Yeah,
it.
And it's great to be able to, you know, like I know you talking about IBS and stuff like that. There was a conversation happening in the Bridezilla community recently with someone saying, I have IBS. Is anyone else here and what is suffering from the same or a similar sort of situation? What are you going to do on your wedding day? And we had, you know, 100 comments under this post.
Wow.
With people saying, yeah, I don't have IBS, but I have this and that. And it's like, actually, you know, there are a lot of things that aren't discussed and I think they should be.
Yes.
And life would be so much easier if we were all a little bit more open and ready to receive.
Totally. And that, you know, goes to your health, like you were just talking about, that relates to inviting guests to your wedding, picking your dress, the whole thing. And that's why I just love how this wedding talk is just a metaphor, like we were saying. It's just an example of all these other important life lessons and life to-dos and, you know, ways to live more authentically. Just, you know, the wedding brings it out, and then you can apply this stuff to everything forever.
Yeah. And mental health is another huge topic. I really encourage, you know, I talk a lot about the idea that, you know, just because you're engaged doesn't mean you can switch off any sort of mental health situation that you've got going down or family members have got going down in their lives. So we have to be adaptable and also be ready to face whatever comes in our path. And that means if you suffer from depression or anxiety, it's not going to go away because you're engaged. We should be open and honest about how we feel and also use this as an opportunity to help other people. And for me, you know, talking about what I talk about for all those episodes, I really think the best gift I've given myself and other people on this podcast is being able to talk about those sort of topics. And hopefully we can talk about it more, and health and just looking after ourselves, really.
It's funny because when we first got engaged, I thought that this ring was like this magical ring that meant no fighting or no problems
yes.
ever. And I will never forget the first fight that we had while I was wearing the ring. And I remember looking at the ring and being like, You fooled me. You're not this magic ring that just makes no fights, you know, because you're all like on cloud nine when you're first engaged. And then we had a fight and I was like, I kind of feel like I should be taking off the ring here. Like, I don't want the ring to hear this fight. But it's true. I mean, just being engaged or being married or whatever doesn't mean that it's all bliss, and all the other things really do need to be addressed. And the wedding, I think, brings out a lot of stuff, you know, that maybe you've been kind of sweeping under the rug.
Yeah. And also the opportunity to actually have a conversation about the next 30 to 40 years, if you're lucky, of being hitched and your expectations about the rest of your life, not just a party. Because I think a lot of people go, no, we'll figure it out later, And you go, well, actually, probably good to decide if you want to have some kiddos, or probably good to decide if you want to, you hate your job and maybe you want to change things up. So I think there's got to be a little bit more scope into like future planning, and not necessarily like, let's come up with a 5-year plan, but just to go, hey, I don't really like kids. I don't really want to have them. Is that going to be a problem for you? Yes. Okay. Well, we need to figure this out, or vice versa.
Mm. Yeah. And the name change.
Oi, that's a big one.
Yeah.
Some people just assume that, you know, some dudes just assume that their lady's going to change. And I think, you know, it's not necessarily the case for some people.
I don't know what I'm going to do. TBD. I might hyphen that shit.
I use both my names. I'm a little bit like, I use my maiden name, my original name for all my performing and stuff. And then I change my married name. I use it for all my legal documents and stuff. So I just do both.
On Facebook? That's what really matters.
I am Maddock, my married name on Facebook, but underneath it says McCormack. So I feel like I'm still, you know, happy to be both.
I like that. That's good. Amazing. Well, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I feel like I could talk to you for hours and hours.
Oh, likewise.
So where should everyone go to get their bride chill on with you?
Well, if you would like to learn more about Bride Chiller, you can visit thebridechiller.com, and that is the gateway to Bride Chillerdom. And we've got this fantastic Facebook group called the Bride Chiller Community. It's a place of, I don't want to say it's a safe place because I really hate that's a fucking safe place shit, but it's a place where it's a dickhead free zone, basically. If you are a dickhead, don't join. And you wouldn't have dickheads listening, so it's fine.
How do you screen for dickheads?
So we've got a little questionnaire.
Oh, this dickhead questionnaire.
Yeah, and it's like, listen, but it's also a place, there's no spam. And if people are jerks, we ditch them. But we really haven't had to do that very much. But it's just a place, you know, it's where people have very frank, honest conversations, but also support each other. And everyone in that group, I would happily go and have a plant-based cocktail with. Anytime.
A hibiscus one. That's perfect.
I would share my
hibiscus. You're the best. Oh, my God. What a way to end.
And you should join and be a part of it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I would love to share all of your amazingness with my people too.
Thank
our people.
Thank you. Our people. Let's unite. Plant party and the chill brides. No, chill brides, plant party.
Work on that.
Yeah,
let's work.
Those two. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I assume I will talk to you again very soon.
Oh, please. Let's book it in. Thank you. Happy days.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. I hope you're feeling fired up. Man, I wish you could come to my plant party wedding. I asked my fiance if I could do an epic giveaway for an invite to our wedding, and he said no. Lame. Maybe I can ship slices of leftover cake. It's going to be a plant party perfection. Or maybe I can just do my wedding and see you another time. I mean, I have been thinking of doing some live events in the new year. That'd be fun, right? Hanging out IRL? Know what else is fun? Reading your awesome reviews in iTunes. Thank you times a million slices of plant party wedding cake if you've left a review. Truly, thank you. And if you haven't, sorry to be a boob, but do you mind? I'd really times a million slices of plant party wedding cake appreciate it. Anyway, how great was Alicia? I could have spoken with her all day. Her podcast is really a blast if you want to check it out. I've linked it in the show notes of this episode, which is where there's all the other deets from this chat, as well as tons of other helpful stuff that makes healthy, happy living not suck. So head to partyinmyplants.com/66 for all of that.